Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
We're happy to join you here on another episode of The Smiley Show, a little midweek edition. And Smiley, we be hearing from you right here. You'd be introducing a guest, having a nice long-form evergreen conversation. But we're doing something a little bit different today, trying to get you a little smarter on the world of golf, on numerous different lanes in the world of golf. So do you want to kind of give us a little teaser on each of the guests here? We got James Colgan from golf.com. We've got Keith Stewart from Read the Line. And we got two conversations that are very different in nature. What do you enjoy most about both of those, Smiley?
Well, I think they were both completely different as far as like what we talked about. The first being James Colgan, who's very intelligent when it comes to many things in the game of golf, but specifically on the broadcast. It's refreshing. Refreshing for me to hear, because I think a lot of people just throw you know what at the wall and just hope they're right on things. James does his homework. He's very well aware of all the different intricacies when it comes to TV and especially the ratings conversation, which dominated the discussion last year, and it's had an uptick this year. So it was fun to check in with him.
Yeah, I mean, James is runs the golf.com hot mic vertical over there, does a ton of media coverage, super intelligent, and all that sort of stuff. As a, you know, diploma carrying J school nerd, love to kind of get a guy like that in here and pick his brain and all sorts of things. And James really has been tracking that rating spike we've seen in pro golf this year and what that represents both in the short term and the long term for TV contracts long term. So if you're a fan of golf, really good to kind of keep an eye on this sort of stuff so you can track how the sport is going to progress at the pro level and how it's going to be presented to you as a fan. So love having James on for that. And then Keith is a recurring guest from Read the Line. Keith does it all. I mean, I've now factored Keith into my data gut model. He's one of the places I go before I make my one and done picks. I'm not going to blame my lack of success this year on him, but a little bit of that with Keith, a little bit of TGL, a little bit of Masters talk. What's your like highlight teaser from the Keith conversation, Smiley?
Well, I think it's always refreshing to talk to Keith because there's no doubt that he does his homework. You know, there's not a stone unturned when it comes to him gathering information. You know, when he speaks upon it, he talks very confidently about the information he gives away. And so I personally love people like that love what they do. He puts, you know, the time and effort in, and I appreciate that. And it definitely comes out incredible in a, you know, interview that we just did with him, because the TGL information that he gave, just the strokes gained stuff, the things that I really have not tuned into just from a data standpoint, the facts he gave us there. And then of course, a really good deep dive into the Masters board as we look ahead. It was fun to just kind of get his insight of what he typically looks for there and who he looks forward to talking to that week.
Keith never does not have an answer, which I love about him. You are so plugged into this game, and you'll come at him with some certain questions where you think, oh, maybe that might stump some people. And Keith's got, well, it's this way for this reason. And then, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So looking forward to putting that conversation out there for you as well. So let's get right to it. We're going to start with our conversation with James Colgan of golf.com, and then we'll send you over to Keith to close out the episode. Enjoy. All right, we have a special guest here on The Smiley Show, and I'm thrilled that this is the one that makes me comfortable, right? Because usually Smiley is the golf expert on this show, and I get to trot out my University of North Carolina journalism degree and revive all my old J-school classes and commiserate here with James Colgan, who is also, I mean, I think you one-up me on the journalism front as a Syracuse University grad. It's like Syracuse and Northwestern, those are the gold standards. But we have James Colgan here. He is a news and features editor for golf.com. He runs their media vertical, the Hot Mic. And as of time recording, he just published a story today about the golf television ratings and the health and bump they've had this year, which represents sort of a nice little incline compared to past years. So James, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. And I think the place that makes the most sense, just for people who haven't had a chance to read the article, it's worth going and checking out right now on golf.com. But just kind of set the landscape for us, because I think lots of people have seen the alarms and seen the sort of concern around golf's television rating, particularly the PGA Tour in past years. And so just maybe explaining where we're coming from and why this year represents a big positive upgrade.
Well, first, Charlie, I'll just say I appreciate you getting the Syracuse thing out of the way early. You know, there's a kind of a rule there. Once you go to school, you can't make it more than 30 seconds onto any show of any kind without talking about it. So I think Northwestern is 15 seconds.
So, you know, yeah, it's good. It's good. Syracuse, you guys, you let it go for a few more seconds. It's good of you guys.
But no, thanks so much for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the show. And yeah, well, as we talk about TV ratings here, I'll try to avoid incriminating Smiley at all in the process.
That's all good, but, man. I'll just tell me you want to go earmuffs.
But no, it's been a fascinating couple of years in the golf world as it comes to TV. There's obviously been a huge amount of structural change in the sport. And anytime there is structural change, that usually results on some sort of impact in the world of golf television. In 2024, it seemed like we caught up from a couple of years of some pretty significant changes and also some, frankly, bad luck with the development of the golf calendar and the winners and, you know, just how the season progressed, where we just kind of had a bad spiral for a couple months of ratings that were down consistently, I would say 10 to 20% across the board for the whole year. I think when we finished off, the ratings were down about 15 to 17% across the two major TV partners of the PGA Tour, that's CBS and NBC. But things have been much better in 2025. We have seen a major ratings rebound. It has not gotten us quite to 2023 levels, but I think it's important for like your listeners to know the general state of cable TV right now is that people are departing, which is not necessarily a great thing. But as a result, it's not necessarily unusual to see ratings falling. It's more unusual to see them falling at the level that they were falling for much of 2024. So to see this kind of rebound has been really big for the sport of golf in general, and also has just been good for the overall vibes of things. I feel like TV ratings don't matter too much, but when they're down, it can start to feel like the sky is falling a little bit. So I've been glad to return to a state of normalcy when it comes to that stuff.
Well, James, that makes a whole lot of sense as somebody who's part of the broadcast, and it definitely felt like the sky was falling. You know what? We constantly were seeing the red numbers every week. The folks that would be reporting the ratings, it's just like, man, I swear we did a better job than that. You know, it just didn't feel like it was that much worse than whatever the year prior was. But that's pretty much just how the entire 2024 season went, it felt like. In a weird year too, right? Like you would think in a year in which Scottie Scheffler has a historic year, right? Like, isn't that even more surprising in the fact that you had Xander winning two majors and then, of course, Scottie winning, was it 8, 9 times? I don't even remember. I lost count.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fascinating thing that I think in the world of TV ratings, they tend to be slow to respond to things that are happening in the sport. And so I think for a long time, golf was really benefiting from this post Tiger Woods generation, and really benefiting from the fact that Tiger was still in the field at a lot of events and still making his way to the majors and still performing in some sort of significant or, you know, meaningful way to TV audiences. And I think the bottom sort of fell out on that over the last few years. I mean, we've seen Tiger at the majors, but we haven't really seen him elsewhere. And I think when you look at that in combination with the fact that there was major structural change in golf, we had players leaving for LIV, and then we had the PGA Tour basically upending its entire product, restating to the world, these are the most important weeks. This is when you should be paying attention. This is how you should be paying attention. I think a lot of fans were confused by that, and maybe it might have turned some of them off. I mean, I think everyone likes to have like one really tidy answer for this stuff, but I actually think it's like 5 or 6 things that were sort of compounding upon one another to make the numbers be the way that they were. But I think the good news is that what we've seen in 2025 is that this signature event series has been great. It has delivered like consistently good tournaments, consistently good storylines. I mean, I think back all the weeks that I've watched golf in 2025, there's been a good Sunday storyline. There's been a leader who is like relevant in the larger conversation of golf. And there's been like some sort of drama or controversy or something, which is like just generally a good formula if you want to perform well when it comes to TV ratings. And I think on top of that, like fans are more used to the transitions that we've seen in the game. They're more used to the new format. They're more used to the fact that, you know, maybe you should be paying attention to the Genesis Invitational more than you were maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Maybe the Genesis is a bad example for that. But but yeah, I mean, I think that that's kind of the thing that we've been looking at. It's like there has been a long time where this stuff was struggling. And I think that we have finally kind of are coming to the other side of those changes. And it's really encouraging to see that the numbers are responding in kind.
Well, James, I think when I've talked to PGA Tour people, you know, in the roof there, as far as just the Nielsen ratings and how they're measured, you know, there was a sense of optimism when it came to this year and the fact that it's an outdated system and a way in which they're measuring ratings this year is, listen, if you completely understand how the Nielsen ratings work, then good on you, because it is very complicated. It's basically a best guess on what the numbers really are. It's exact. I mean, it's not an exact science is what I'm getting at. But I'm wondering, too, if they would have started last year with the way they're measuring the Nielsen ratings now, do you think the numbers would have been pretty dang good last year, considering how good the season really was?
Yeah. Well, so I think what's funny about this is like, so this big Nielsen change is essentially 4 years. Nielsen has relied on a representative sample group of people who agreed to have a thing attached to the back of their TV that tracked what they were watching at all times. And
is that weird? Is that kind of weird?
Incredibly strange. And
do you have one?
Do you know anyone who has one? I guess the better question. Does anyone know anyone who has one of these things?
Definitely not. And so this is like,
that's even a question too, is like, is the golf watching crowd, you know, their target audience, the people that are actually watching the golf, are they people that would actually even ever have this box on the back of their TV?
Yeah, that's the big thing. That's what every like TV exec, every like person I've spoken to in the broadcast world in golf, every single one of them has griped about this, because the typical representative sample for golf, the people who are watching, like older men, are almost by and large not interested in getting $10 knocked off their cable bill every month so they can have someone tracking what they're doing. Like, that doesn't make any sense to begin with. So I think this like this change that you're talking about has been this thing called the big data panel. And it's basically where Nielsen is able to track stuff from like smart TVs and people who are watching over set-top boxes. Like, the traditional ways that people consume television are now being incorporated in a more significant way in the audience numbers that we're seeing. And so golf always expected that it would perform better than maybe the NFL or the NHL in that same measurement. But I think that was also baked into the kind of discussion around golf TV ratings. I don't think it was necessarily like lost on advertisers that this was the case. So I don't know that, like, yes, the numbers would have been better, but I don't know that would have made like a significant difference in what the overall storyline was or the narrative was about TV audience in 2024. But I do think like what we're seeing now is having a dominant world number one player, having a guy like Xander Schauffele who'd struggled to get over the hump and now has two major wins. Like, that's awesome for the sport. It's awesome for the TV product. It gives you two more guys who are relevant characters every single week that when they're at the top of the leaderboard, you want to tune in. You want to see what they have, what they're doing, what their shots are, how they're performing, if they're in contention. Like, it's a reason to invest in the television product. And that is why what happened last year, even though it was a great season, it might not have reflected in TV ratings. I think we're catching the tail of that right now, and hopefully we can kind of keep with that into the future.
James, just to play it forward a little bit, I believe the CBS deal is up in 2030. I'm spacing right now on when the NBC deal is up, and kind of looking at what this, you know, short-term period of success represents in terms of what that next contract looks like, right? I'm just curious because there are a lot of financial implications for obviously more money. We're trying to get more money to players. We don't know what the state of the PGA Tour live relationship is going to look like, you know, at the time of that next contract renewal. But what is your best guess as to what the size of those deals are going to look like? Do you think they'll increase in value? Do you think they'll decrease in value? Do you think there'll be some material change in the way the relationship looks between the broadcaster and the PGA Tour in terms of who supports what part of those broadcasts?
Yeah, this is like the $3 billion question you've just asked here, Charlie. I would say, okay, there's like a few things happening at one time. So you have TV ratings that are falling across the board for sports. But the value of sports on TV is consistently increasing. And the reason for this is because in an environment where everyone's TV ratings are falling, sports have proven they are the only place that you can consistently get a large audience of people to tune in. So there's like a scarcity factor here. Even though the audiences are smaller, they're way more valuable because they're the only place that you can get them, basically. So I would say at a baseline, golf is entering these negotiations, you know, in 2030. It's for both broadcast partners are the same year at the same time. They're entering that with a strong hand. But at the same time, there have been all of these big changes about what, or big conversations about what changes could be coming to professional golf in the next 5 years. Could we be looking at a world tour? Could we be looking at a reunification strategy that sees golf playing way more frequently in Europe and overseas? Like, could we be looking at fewer events per year? All of these things will affect eventually what the overall value of these TV deals is. And so it's really hard to project like how much money they might or might not be able to get because we don't really know what they're negotiating on right now. But I would say if we're keeping things as they are right now in this very moment, I would say the tour should expect to make at least as much money, if not more, in the next set of rights. And I think it should be like a fair amount more than they're making currently. If it's $750 million now, I would expect at least $1 billion a year for the next set of rights.
As a quick follow that to that as well, because you mentioned the European angle. This is something Smiley and I have talked a lot about on this show. If you were in charge of this whole thing, how do you approach the global aspect of televising golf? Because of course it's a noble thing in terms of game growth and serving different audiences. Yeah. But as we know, the American television market is the one that you can sell against to make enough money to justify all these things. And so we talked a lot about just that fall DP World Tour segment of the schedule where you could almost compete with, you know, Premier League or soccer in that morning window, people waking up, watching amazing finishes of places like Royal County Down. Is there a way to make that lucrative enough where you can have a global product and sell against it enough to justify the cost?
Yeah, I think there is a way to do this. This is a heady conversation. You're asking me some big questions here.
You got a Syracuse diploma, buddy. I mean, you're our guy for this. Well,
most likely the broadcast, Charlie, would probably be taking a World feed or a Sky Sports feed. Yeah. It wouldn't be the full-on production that you would get from a CBS or NBC. So you would be watching in the eyes of how, you know, any DP World Tour would be televised, which is not a bad thing. Just saying that's probably how it would probably go.
Point taken there. I guess I'm curious as to the relative value of those television contracts, which is, you know, where James' sort of expertise kind of comes into play here, where it's like, how can we make those things viable television products so that you can take the game globally on television? I think you have to rule out some markets. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, I think it was a little bit unfair to compare LIV Singapore to the Players' Championship.
Totally fair. What are you talking about?
But I mean, I just think there's a certain point. It's like, how can we do golf globally to where we can make it, you know, lucrative enough to make it make sense? Yeah. And where can we just not do golf globally unless we want to sell a bunch of tickets in Australia or something like that and just make it a local regional product?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is kind of the massive question right now facing golf. It's like a global golf tour might be really valuable to the financial parties that are interested in investing in the PGA Tour right now. but it might not be tremendously valuable to the PGA Tour. Like, there is a reason why golf exists in its current schedule. There's a reason why it is centered around the United States. There's a reason why the commercial model is the way that it is. As much as we might dislike the number of commercials that we see, like, it is a highly profitable business for everyone involved. And that's a really hard thing to pass up. To your point, though, Charlie, I think we could see a world where we focus our attention in the fall season to Europe and points further east. Obviously, it's a challenge, but I think one of the big benefits right now is, like, those tournaments are not necessarily generating a huge amount of the audience into pro golf as it exists currently. And so while it's really helpful to have tournaments that air during the fall season, it is definitely a part of the $750 million a year that, you know, the PGA Tour is reaping from its TV partners. I don't think that they are in a place where they, like, could not go without that. And so if they were to look to be like, hey, let's go to Royal County Down for a weekend and let's just, like, rip through Scotland and see some of the coolest courses there. And then, you know, we'll go to Australia where the audience is insane. I mean, this is just a random aside, but I was having a conversation with the guys over at Good Good Golf a few days ago, and they told me that five of their top 10 viewing cities in the world, this is one of the biggest YouTube channels in the world, five of their top 10 viewing cities in the world are in Australia. Wow. Which is just crazy. Like, it's a golf-starved place, and it's an audience that's super invested in the game. So I think there is a way where you could do, you know, yeah, it's not going to be five events a year. It's not going to be a month out of the season that we're spending in Australia, or, you know, it's not going to be 4 months in the summer in Scotland. But I think we could invest in a product that would see us play those courses and be in those really historic areas with golf, and, you know, be touching those audiences that love golf so deeply and want to have the game there. I feel like we could do that reasonably under the current financial model, and everyone could still survive without, you know, delivering 15,000 viewers or, you know, some NBA size stadium audience. So, yeah.
I would love to see a PGA Tour event in December in Australia. I know that they already have the Aussie Open, the Aussie PGA. Just slap a PGA Tour logo on top. That's all you need to do. I'm not sure if that's exactly what the Aussies want us to do, because they probably want most of their Aussies playing, which would make sense. But yeah. Point stands. Anyways, one of the other points I just wanted to touch on here, because you did mention the PIF and LIV and the PGA Tour, and if a deal were to happen, right? That's the kind of point you made as far as just not knowing exactly what you're negotiating against or for, not knowing what the deal is going to look like, if it, even a deal does get done. So my question would be, and from what I've heard, James, is that LIV would be, you know, the team golf aspect seems to be a sticking point in these negotiations from their side. And the PGA Tour is going to have to make a decision whether they're going to decide if they're going to have 2 to 3 to 4 team golf events. As it goes for the golf fan and the PGA Tour fan and these ratings, how much do you think this could affect your loyal PGA Tour fan who doesn't like team golf? They don't want anything to do with it. It screws up the calendar. And even the players, I'm sure there's going to be players that aren't going to get starts because of this. So then you're going to fire up Monday Q. He's going to be upset. If he's upset, that means most of the golf world's upset. So with that being said, I know it's kind of a loaded question here, but could you see that being a big problem?
Absolutely. I could definitely see it being a problem. I think the question is more, what are you replacing these team events? Like, what are you choosing to replace with these team events? If you are replacing some events in the tour schedule that have some annual significance and that people really care about every year,
then let's just use Houston, for example, this week.
Yeah. Like, I would think that would be an issue. I would not personally be supportive of that just as a golf fan myself. But I also think the audience would probably feel that way to some extent. I mean, I think, yeah, there's definitely this, like, chunk of the fall season that we're talking about. I think you could restructure a lot of that and fans would be pretty unaffected by it, so long as you were still supporting the same neighborhoods and you know, still kind of reaching the same audiences and doing all that stuff. But like messing with the meat of the pro golf season in order to do it, I don't know.
I don't know. That's what's going to happen. If a deal gets done, it sounds like to me that that's going to be one of the sticking points. And for me as a fan, I don't want anything to do with it for 3 to 4 weeks. You know, if I'm on the road covering team golf and it's not a normal PGA Tour event, what are we even doing here? You know, like there's not going to be a world ranking points. I guess there may be. I'm not sure exactly how that would work. Does Liv get world ranking points? Would it work for the PGA Tour now? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I would also say too, like I'm confused about like how all of this would work in the bigger picture of the sport. Like how are people going to be invested in this product? I mean, you just think about like what makes a good TV broadcast, right? Like why people watch. This is what I was just saying before. It's stars they care about, it's events they care about, and it's like moments of significance, whether that's a historic player, something really crazy happening down the stretch of a tournament, you know, some big comeback, or you know, a story that's worth investing in. Like that is why people watch golf. It's those three things.
And happy hour.
So what was that?
And happy hour.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I wasn't talking specifically about Friday afternoon telecasts.
I'm just kidding, man.
But like, you know, when you think about this, if people are watching golf for those three reasons, how is team golf satisfying any of them? Just answer that question. If you can't answer the question, then you have your answer about how the TV ratings are going to work.
That's a great, great point there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what James came here to do. We spent about 20 plus minutes getting smarter here. We're greatly appreciative of you taking the time, James, to talk a little TV ratings amongst other things with us here. Do you want to give us a little tease for any golf.com hot mic coverage plans for Augusta on the upcoming, your travels here?
Oh man. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I should be sharing this. This might be proprietary information, but I have a big, big profile that I've been working on about Jim Nantz in celebration of his 40th Masters this year. So if you're a listener of the show, probably by the time you hear this, the story won't be out. So just keep your eyes out because it's, I'm really excited about
it. Congrats, man. That's a cool awesome. Feature to do.
Cannot wait to give that one a read and see you down at the Masters here in a few weeks. So, James, thanks so much for taking the time. Hope to have you back on soon.
Cheers. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, James.
All right, we got another great recurring guest here on the Smiley Show, none other than Keith Stewart of Read the Line, who joined us, I guess, a few months ago to prep us for the PGA Tour season ahead. We were coming off a great one-and-done season, and Keith, we've been ice cold this season. All right. So you're here to kind of give us a little more of an injection of mojo here, maybe kind of give us some nice Houston picks on the way out. But the place I think we want to start is a place we saw you in person just a few weeks ago, TGL. You've been all over this beat all season long. You were at time of listening, I think the second match of the finals will have been played. So maybe you can give us a little prediction there. But you were at match one last night, Atlanta Drive, New York Golf Club, a.k.a. the Pigeons, as we call them lovingly on the show. What was the atmosphere like there?
You know what? President's Day was absolutely fantastic. So you know, that triple header was so good. Every match basically came down to the last hole. And that's what we were looking for. And it's been building towards this. And, you know, I'd love to ask Smiley this question. But like when the guys first started, I really think they had no idea of what they were kind of doing in order to play. But they're the best players in the world. And they have figured this out. And you look at last night, the only reason that – you know, and I asked Xander this question in the press room afterwards, but the only reason that Atlanta Drive pulled that out by 1 point was that because they're better at managing situations, AKA the hammer, right? New York lost by 1 point and they had two hammers left in their closet, right? And I asked Xander the question. I said, you know, like, what are you doing with two hammers still? And you lost by one. And he didn't really care for the question, but, you know, the point is warranted. You know, like Atlanta Drive has outscored everyone by use of the hammer since the change of the rules. And these guys, they're a wagon train coming, man. They are really, really good. And yeah, exactly. You know,
I got one hammer in my pocket. What am I doing? I need to be throwing that thing too.
Yeah.
Is Cantlay the best hammer usage management player of all time? Is that, I mean, is he Hall of Fame worthy?
Is Cantlay the Tiger of the hammer? I love this.
So there's a couple things I've noticed being on site is that these guys have these team managers, and those guys hang by that electronic board that kind of points out where they're going to aim on the big screenplay board, and then talks to them about different analytics and situations. So last night, when Cantley goes to throw the first hammer, the guys are all down at the green, and Cantley kind of slips away. And you wouldn't have seen this on TV. He goes over to the guy, and the guy's name is Ben, right? Because Marty Smith interviewed him afterwards, and he goes, I saw you walk over here, talk to this guy over here, then you came back and you threw the hammer down. Like, what just happened there? And he's like, well, I spoke to Ben, and Ben said it was a good time to do it, so I did it. You know, so he was all like shy and coy about why he was doing it. But they are looking at situations. Like, you guys play golf, you know this. You don't hammer people when you know you're going to win the hole. You hammer people when it's like two-thirds in your favor and the other team has to make a decision. Well, last night they made New York make so many decisions. Some were good and some were bad. Admittingly, Xander, when he accepted the hammer and you know, Billy makes the big putt and all the fist bumping and everything, not a good hammer situation to accept. Other ones they declined. So I really think that they're using their team manager to the best of their ability. So I don't know if it's directly Cantley Smiley or this guy Ben who's giving them the information. But either way, they're doing it the better than anybody. If we're going to talk about TGL, I have to thank Smiley for making a hole in one. So I'm going to give him a shout out, because the next TGL that we were at, they put out, just like they do on the PGA Tour, when a guy makes a hole in one, they put out a bucket of beers for the media center. So, Smiley,
how about that?
Cheers to you, my friend. Thanks for the round.
I could promise you it wasn't in the middle of the face and that there was a bit of luck involved. And I don't question necessarily the simulator. I don't know. I don't know how it went in, but we're happy that it did. It was a defining moment potentially for the Smiley Show. So,
and speaking of hammers, I mean, we had JT, of course, joined us via FaceTime, incursion to hammer there. So that's a little continuation on that theme. And also, I think it was dating back to the press conference when we were originally exploring hammer usage. It was our guy, Matt Gannon, who sits there right in the same row as you at TGL, who was asking Atlanta Drive about their hammer strategy. And they, Don't pull the curtain too far back on this. We don't want people to know our strategy here. So it's been a fun season in the evolution of that strategy and using that. So, Keith, if people are listening to this tomorrow and night two of TGL, the finals has been played, what are your predictions to how tonight goes? Do we get a clean sweep for Atlanta Drive?
I do think we get a clean sweep from Atlanta Drive, because no matter how hard anyone tries from all of these other teams, New York was on a tremendous heater. You know, the last team that they lost to was Atlanta 4-0 in the third week of the season, which was way back in mid-January. And since then, New York was just rolling through the TGL. But they ran into that wagon train, you know, that Atlanta Drive. You know, the guys are just unbelievable. And I don't see them figuring out the strategy that quickly. The odds have changed. Yesterday, it was minus 140 to about plus 100 that Atlanta Drive was favored. Tonight, it is... Well, for match two, it's going to be about minus 120 to minus 110. Atlanta Drive still favored, much closer. It's been a great season for TGL betting, because if you understand how people like Atlanta Drive use the strategy to their advantage. I mean, Billy Horschel hasn't missed a green in regulation all TGL season, right? Justin Thomas.
What? Say that again?
Billy Horschel has not missed a green in regulation in TGL. Now, he doesn't, you know, you only get to hit so many a night with triples, right? But he hasn't missed a green. JT made over 100 feet of putts, and he was the strokes gained leader in putting. They are by far the best scrambling team. So all of those hammer situations, they generally come around the green. Those guys get the ball in the hole quicker than anybody, and they take advantage of people. So like that, like you have to think about what you're doing. And those guys do it better than anybody. So I think Atlanta Drive rolls on. There's a sweep. The T-shirts, the hats are passed out tonight. And I'm hoping for a little...
read all about it.
Bit of the champagne room afterwards.
Tell them to send us the Pigeons championship gear to us. We will wear that proudly on the show. And also, I've got another rule wrinkle. It's like we should make Billy Horschel play with the club flipped over left-handed. He still might not miss a green at that rate. Those are my suggestions for what they are worth.
Well, he was warming up last night, and we were yelling to him to like flip it over and hit it lefty. And he was like, "No way!" He's like, look at all the stuff in here. He was like, "No way." So,
hey, do you know how they sort through the lineups? There's four players, obviously three play. Is there a team captain who makes the decision on who sits out? Have you figured that out by chance?
So I had heard rumblings, Smiley, about how they do that. So last night I asked the question of the Atlanta Drive guys. I asked Cantley. I said, Patrick, is this a preview for tomorrow night's lineup, or are we going to see Lucas? could you let us know? And they were like, well, that's above our pay grade. We're just told by ownership who's going to play and by the team manager, and that's it.
What?
So I can't believe that those guys would give up, well, Cantley alone would give up that kind of control. Now, obviously, those three guys are playing very well, but I mean, Lucas Glover had a top 10 at Valspar and he was third at the Players. So, like, I mean, he's no slouch and he's local. It's not like he's flying in from Arizona or something. So it's all very interesting to me. And supposedly the $9 million purse that goes to first is basically distributed based upon the number of holes you play. So if you got to remember now, they got to split a little bit of that with Nick Dunlop too. He played a match as well. So it's all,
wow.
It's all behind
the
curtain.
He's going to have a fun night with a bucket of beer just sitting there. Come on, baby.
He's right there in Jupiter too. They need to fly him in for the championship parade.
I think you got to sit Fitzy tonight though. Hasn't been necessarily in form on TGL or off TGL. I think he rolled out the same TGL lineup for the New York club too.
So they were announced this morning. They are the same six guys. They have changed the order. Not quite sure how much that's going to make a difference, but they have definitely changed the order.
Would the order change go?
Oh boy. Off the top of my head.
Cause Xander was lash last night, wasn't he?
Yeah. Xander's going first and okay. Cam Young and then Ricky. And then on the other side, oh golly, I think it's Cantley, Billy, and then JT last.
We look forward to seeing who wins. Obviously, it's been, I think, a successful TGL season. I think it'll be interesting to talk to the players once they kind of finish up TGL, just overall, you know, impressions, thoughts. How tired were you during this entire four to swing and coming from the West Coast? We'll be interested to see what the teams look like next year, if they all stay exactly the same. Definitely be interesting to follow, but we definitely want to, before we lose you, we want to definitely talk some Masters coming up.
Okay.
As you are sure, this is something I probably would imagine you've probably taken a peek at. This isn't something that just sneaks up on a guy like Keith Stewart. So we want to just kind of start going through the odds board. Okay. Charlie, I'll let you kind of run through the top 10. Sure. And then I think we can kind of just pick out some favorites and then maybe just guys that, you know, when you think about the Masters, typically you don't think about, guys that would, you know, that you wouldn't expect to win the Masters, but is there a chance for a guy to potentially do it this year? So just all encompassing Masters conversation we can get into, Charlie.
Yeah, Keith gave us a little hot tip here on a website to use, and so I'm assuming this is their most favorable odds you can find on the internet. Keith, is that how it'd be? Okay, so we've got Scottie Scheffler at 5-1. We got Rory McIlroy 6.5-1. Ludvig Åberg at 15-1. John Rahm at 16-1. Bryson DeChambeau at 18-1, Colin Morikawa also at 18-1, Xander Schauffele at 19-1, and Justin Thomas at 22-1. That's kind of your top crop there, Keith. Any names there that feel like they're of more value than others of that group?
Ooh, value. That's a very tricky word at the top, especially when it comes to the favorites. You know, I would say that the number one player in the world right now currently is Rory McIlroy. Right. He's got two wins and Scotty seems to be slightly off. I mean, I know that still means like top 15 every week for him, but he seems slightly off. He's not able to close the deal like he was a year ago, was a couple of years ago. And, you know, there's a theme building over the last couple of years. You look at 22 leading in. Scheffler won a couple times. He wins the Masters. Then in 23, Rahm wins three times, wins the Masters. Scheffler last year wins three times, wins the Masters. Rory's won twice. He's playing Memorial Park this week. It's a bomber's paradise where you also have to be able to lag, putt, and chip. Some pretty good skills for Rory McIlroy. So, you know, he's either going to have two or three wins coming into the Masters. I think at the top of the board, I know there's a lot of ghosts down Magnolia Lane, but Rory, not necessarily for value, he would be, in my mind, the guy to beat. The other guys at the top, they have a lot of questions to answer for me. Ludvig seemed like he was rolling along, miscut at the Players. We have, you know, Rahm has to play for LIV the week before the Masters. I really want to see what Rahm does, because remember last year, he was a non-factor in defending.
Where are they playing the week before, Keith? Do you know?
Oh, boy, they're in.
Is it in the States?
It's in the States.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say it's Doral. They're playing Doral again the week before. So they're playing the Blue Monster, a good comp course. Right. So for, you know, driving the ball, short game, all of the factors, crazy greens there, Gil Hanse's update on that Dick Wilson design. So I want to see what Rahm does. I want to see what Ludvig does at Valero. He's going to play next week, Smiley. Colin close? He's got a great history there. Some of these things need to play out at the top of the board. But I think Rory right now has to be the guy to beat.
Keith, you're one of the cool things you do in the Read the Line newsletter for each week is like you have three main categories you're looking at for each of these tournaments that are success indicators. What do you define those as, most importantly, at Augusta National?
So Keith's keys, right?
Everyone, Keith's keys, yes.
Keith's keys. Love it.
You, we'll have to run a little graphic across the screen here, just like a little jangling keys.
You, well, it's easy to remember alliteration, you know? So a brand within the brand at Read the Line. Keith's keys, easily, you have to start with long iron approach play. You know, everyone calls it a second shot golf course at Augusta National. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what was Tiger's superpower? What was Jack's superpower? The guys that win there are all tend to be or contend there a lot, even from this modern age. Scotty, you know, John Rahm, they're all great long iron players. I would have to start there. Then you've got to have some around the green acumen. So I think that you really need to be a good pitcher and chipper of the golf ball, especially off of tight lies. And then the third key I would say is that Fuzzy Zeller's the last one to do it. And I know Ludwig got close last year at runner up, but was he really that close to Scotty?
Come on. We're not going to hate on the guys, the rookies that had a chance right there at the end. We can't hate on those guys.
Well, I'm not hating on them. I'm just saying that my third key is that
I hope you're catching my drift here.
Yeah, I you know, with all due respect, right?
Thank you.
With all due respect, right? Okay. Smiley, I only open my mouth to change feet. Okay. So it's one of those things. But with all due respect, right? Fuzzy Zeller is the last debutante to win. And I would like someone who has been there before. Everyone talks about the ability. I mean, when you bring up the Tiger conversation, the guy can barely walk and they're like, well, he could still top 10 at Augusta. And it's all from local knowledge. It's all from experience playing in the Masters and understanding how it all works there. And, you know, that's why Scotty and those guys are so good there. So those would be my three keys I would look at.
I want to talk a little bit about Xander Schauffele, Keith, because we've got a little bit of a sample size now from him. Although you listen in to some of the things he's talked about, how he's worked on his golf swing. It's felt dodgy at times the first couple of weeks. And then he shows up at Valspar and you can kind of look at the numbers and see that it's weird to see that his putter has been this off. You know, he's such a good putter traditionally, but then what you have to love of is how well he hit his irons this past week as a potential recipe for the Masters coming up. You just talked about the iron game being important and the speed. I mean, he's mid 180s ball speed, so that hasn't gone anywhere. So he's got the pop. The iron game was terrific last week, and I don't doubt that Xander Schauffele can't figure out his putter.
Well, you know what? He and Cantlay had 6 feet each last night, and Cantlay makes and he misses and they lose the first match. But one of the things that's been important to note is that Xander has been struggling with the driver a little bit, right? I'm with you, Smiley and Charlie. I 100% know that Xander, when it comes time to close, that the guy's going to make putts and he's going to scramble better than, you know, 90% of the field at any given tournament he's in. But he's made some comments to the fact that he's hitting his driver a lot higher. He's launching it a lot higher than he's used to. And it seems kind of odd to him. And he's been trying to figure that out. And he's been going back and forth, you know, making some little bit of equipment tweaks and everything. Mm. And you know as well as anybody, no one's winning major championships if they're thinking about something that's off the course. So that could be personal. That could be, the tour vans. That could be any of those things. But I think that he needs to kind of ratchet down, you know, pardon the pun, what's going on off the tee. Obviously, he just had a career strokes gained approach week there at Valspar on a very difficult golf course with 5 par 3s. So kudos to him. And I do think the putter will come around, but he gets the driver worked out and he definitely would be somebody whose odds are, you know, slipping down the board a little bit because he's only been mediocre since the injury.
Isn't that interesting just to hear from Xander and, of course, Rory, guys that are trying to kind of figure it out with the driver? You know, how much time do you spend in that world, Keith, in the equipment world? You know, obviously former PGA pro, you know, so have a ton of experience in that space. But just hearing guys talk about even Rory's specific lament that it's like the cycle of producing a new driver every single year, having a new one. And you know, the last year's one is just fine. In fact, it's great, but being put in the new model because that's the one they're trying to sell. Do you find that, how interesting do you find that whole storyline now for two major stars on the PGA Tour?
You know, 3+ years ago when I started going out on site and handicapping events, the first people that I wanted to talk to were the tour van folks. Mm. I'd love to talk to the coaches more, but that's not really open to conversation when it comes to gambling. But I could definitely talk to the tour technicians, right? You could also talk to the guys that cover that. You know, Golf Works is a wonderful website, and they have at least one individual there every week that is looking into bags and they're looking for equipment testing. Well, those are the first people I went out and let's say we took them out for happy hour, right? To get to know those guys, because those guys know when people are switching things. They knew when Rory for TGL switched it to the new woods, then he came up to Bay Hill and then he had the famous Uber driver bring up the old ones, right? They know those things. They know exactly what's in everyone's bag. It, you know, and it's not always as obvious as when Scotty changed to the mallet putter, right? Where everybody knows about it. They know about all the little tweaks here and there, you know, that Jordan was adding a hybrid out there at Torrey for the Genesis because he had done that. And the only time he'd ever put a hybrid in his bag was during the US Open when it was played at Torrey. Like all those little details come into play and it tells you how settled a guy is with how they're approaching that week in the golf course. So there are tremendous parallels between the tour van and of course the lines board that you're looking at right in front of you.
And Keith, with obviously not watching a ton of LIV Golf, I think I asked this question to you last year as we led up to one of the majors. Is it seems hard for me to kind of sort through what to expect. Last year, we didn't get the best of showings from the LIV players. Bryson DeChambeau kind of carried the flag from them. You saw Joaquin kind of play decent at the Open, and you see John Rahm kind of find himself at the Open Championship. What do you make of what we're going to see from the LIV guys this year? Are you expecting a lot of the same, or do you think there's going to be a Neiman who finds his way out or a Tyrrell Hatton to go win a major championship this year? Just curious if you feel like there's going to be any heat from the LIV guys.
You know, those three names right there, John Rahm, I would always be worried about. I think John Rahm, no matter where he's playing, is a top three talent in the world. You know, I just think that he is. And maybe Xander's fourth, but John Rahm is an unbelievable talent. And I think that he could win at any venue at any time. I would like, you know, it would be nice if he had more competition to push him, but we don't live in that world, right? Tyrrell Hatton has been somebody who's great at backdoor top tens in majors because of his skill set. He's such a great long iron player. He seems to get easily frustrated when it comes to course management. So, I worry about when courses get very, very difficult, him managing his game well enough to last 72 holes. I mean, the hardest thing to do in the world is to hole out your golf ball for 72 straight holes and keep yourself mentally sane, right? And the guys that have always been the best at that are the best in the world. So, Tyrrell's fantastic. He was eighth in the world when we switched the calendar to 2025. The guy's playing tremendous golf, wonderful short game and everything. But I wonder about, I guess the answer to your question is pretty simple. I don't expect much from Joaquin Neiman. I expect the same from Tyrrell Hatton, and I expect the same from Rahm because they are who they are. We know them at this point in their career. If it was a younger person like David Puig or something like that that was going to pop up, I'm just going to miss them because we don't have the data or the competition to really kind of understand where those guys are at. But I know what I can get out of John Rahm. Mm. He played the best. He top 10 at Troon in the wrong wave. I mean, that was unbelievable golf that he played at Troon.
Really good.
Unfreaking believable golf, right?
And in the bad wave.
In the bad wave. And like Joaquin Neiman has never top 10 in a major, right? You know, I was asked this question. It's a funny question. I was asked this question last night at TGL. Somebody said, hey, what's the hype around Corey Connors right now, in the betting world? And I said, you go find me a person in the betting world who's ever made money on Corey Connors, then you found a unicorn, right? Like it's the same thing with Neiman in a major, right? It just does, you just don't win any money, right? Like, yeah, you'll get Corey Connors to top 20, but what's that? Plus 150? He's not going to win, right? I mean, he won twice, right? He won at Valero. He qualified on a Monday, so he wasn't a part of the odds board that you're looking at right there. So you couldn't bet him that time to win. And then the second time he won, his odds were so low, you wouldn't bet him against a full field, even at an event where he'd won before. Like, Neiman sits in that pocket where you're like, yeah, he's great and everything, but until he proves that he can really contend at a major, which he just hasn't done, I just don't see the upside.
And Brooks Koepka would be, just feelings on him, same old, same old. Do you feel like his form is dipped, or do you think he still has another major championship in him?
I think that Brooks Koepka, because of the mental side of major championship golf, still has one in him. I think that the Masters catches his attention the most. I think he would really love to have that level of acceptance by, the institution of golf, the ecosystem itself. I think he'd love to be a part of that champion's dinner as somebody who's always kind of been, a disruptor in this space and everything. I think that the Masters catches his attention the most, but Brooks will be relevant in some majors for some time. But there's a lot of young talent there that's obviously finding their way as well.
Keith, you'll be down there. You'll be at Augusta National in the press building, hoping to see you for a little pimento cheese sandwich. Maybe sprinkle. My new hack this last year is sprinkling some potato chips inside the pimento cheese sandwich. Give it a little crunch.
Oh.
I'll show you how to put that one together when we're down there. Here's what I'm interested to know is, which of, and I know we don't have the full list of availability yet for what the press conferences will be the first 2 days. Who are you most interested to talk to heading into the week, just to kind of get a feel for whatever it is that you a question you want to ask them, or just to get a sense of where their head is at heading into the week?
Two people. I'd love to know from Fred Ridley what's going on with the golf course, how they feel like it's going to play. And that's selfishly because, you know, at Read the Line, we have to put out a course preview, and that has a big deal to do with, you know, whether it was like a really soft course or the tree changes.
Yeah, I've heard it's they've lost a lot is what I've heard.
Yeah. So getting there on Monday, walking around right away, you know, looking at those hallways, seeing how that changes sight lines. Does that give certain people an advantage? The way that you shape the ball off the tee, like all of those factors. So Fred Ridley would be one I'd love to hear about the state of the nation. And then the other guy's Rom. Rom had a very disappointing major season last year. You got to remember, he came with flip-flops to the U.S. Open, didn't play, right? He was tremendous to close at Troon, right? He was not good at the PGA. He was not good at defending at the Masters. And then all of those LIV guys got a fifth major last year. They got a chance for the gold medal. And we all know what happened there because I bet Rom, and I can tell you exactly what happened. With eight holes to go, I have no idea what happened, right? But Scottie Scheffler won the gold, and Rom didn't even win a medal. He had a five-stroke lead, right?
God, people don't talk about that enough, right?
Right, they don't. And that so if Troon was the close to the year, guys, he would have thought, man, I've got great momentum going into major season for 2025, but it was the Olympics. The last time he went against Scottie, Xander, Rory, all of those guys, that's what happened to him. So I would really love to see if the Raging Bull is, you know, you talking to me? Like, is he ready? Is he ready?
Yeah.
Do you have any long shots you have your eye on for the Masters?
You know, it's tough to get long shots, you know, through the finish line. But there's a couple guys in the middle that are playing some good golf that have been good around that place.
Mm-hmm.
One is sitting in the 30s, and it's unheard of that Jordan Spieth would be about 35, 33 to 1. Right. And it's only happening now. Now, Jordan's not playing this week, but he's probably going to play the Valero. I don't know that for a fact yet. I do know Ludwig's going to play because he told us, but, you know, in the media center. But like Jordan at 33, if he plays well at Valero in Texas, his home state, right, that number is going to get cut significantly on the Monday of the Masters. And then the other guy is that.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Willie Z.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, look at that. Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
He played good there. I was figuring that's where he was going, but I was feeling it.
No, 100, Smiley, you're spot on. You know, Willie Z, all spring, when I'm on site, when I was at Torrey, Pebble, you know, all these different places where Zalatoris was to start the year, he added a lot of lag to his golf swing, which is interesting. Because, you know, the first time I saw Willie Z was Houston when he won the junior in 14, right? You know, very, very stiff, very, very rigid move at the golf ball. Obviously, it did what it did to his back. Now he's added a little syrup there, right, to the recipe. And I tell you what, it's starting to come around, and it looked better at Bay Hill. And then I saw it again at the Players, and I was like, you know what? And we saw signs of it at the Players. Like, he's getting more and more comfortable. Does he still have the issues with the putter and everything? Sure. But guess what? Around Augusta, you don't have to be a great putter to win. Remember, that wasn't one of my keys. Historically, it's so hard to putt that great putters are mitigated at Augusta National. The greens are so difficult, right? You don't need to favor putters there. What you do need is to favor lag putters or guys that are really good at two putting, right? Like if you're a really good putter, you can't charge at most of those putts, right? Smiley knows he's been down those hallways, right?
I would say the outlier would maybe be Jordan when he was winning those years. That was kind of just his ability to make so many putts.
Yeah, that's true. But he also didn't look at the hole, right? Like, yes, Jordan made a lot of putts in that stretch. Don't get me wrong. And he was known for that. But at the same time, like traditionally, the people that have been like great putters on tour haven't always been able to use that superpower there, right? So somebody like Willie Z, you know, he was just fair at the Valspar. Thought that would have been a better spot for him because of, you know, how much you have to hit those hallways, the five par threes, you know, the approach play and everything. But he, you know, when we were on the West Coast, he was in the 70s. When we came here, by the time we, but right before the players, I brought it up on a show and I said, he's like 50. Now he's down to 40. By that Monday, he'll be in the 30s. So those are two guys in the middle that I could certainly see having enough value, to use your word, Charlie, right? That would be worth a futures ad at this time.
Keith, this has been such an awesome hang. Always a fun time. Just, you know, you get making us a little bit smarter here, talking about all different sorts of angles as we approach the game of pro golf. Here's what we need on the way out. All right.
Oh boy.
I'm begging you. Please, please, Keith Stewart, help me. My one and done picks have been so bad this year. Just give us a little bit of nuggets of wisdom from the heavens. Houston Open this week. Who are some guys you like? You got to help me out here.
All right. I think it's easy to go with a couple guys kind of they're in the middle tier, but there is no like favorite zone. There's two guys at the top, and then it's very unique. I mean, this used to happen with Tiger. Tiger would be 2 or 3 to 1, and then the next guy would be 25 to 1. But we've got two guys at the top, Rory and Scotty, and then you've got Sungjae and a couple others in there. Right in that little zone, you've got two guys that have been very, very good lately. And if you're trying to get back on the horse, Charlie, right, I think you need some consistency in your life. So I think somebody, you know, that approaches the game with a lot of details. I'm going to give you some hints because I know Smiley wants to guess, right?
This is his game. This is great.
He approaches with a lot of details. When he warms up on the range, he always has alignment rods there, right? He does something very unique with his hands when he plays, and I'm leaving it at that. And he's an incredible long iron player, and we have 5 par 3s again this week, Charlie, right?
I know who it is.
Who do you got?
What's your guess?
It's time to get back on the Rye Guys.
Yes.
Rye Guys! You know what? That's what we needed, Keith. We went away from the Rye Guys bandwagon for too long, and that's really where our home base is.
Yeah,
so I love that. I also love it. You every time you come on the show, you play Guess Who with Smiley.
The alignment six gave it away.
and then
meticulous. I was like, I know who that is.
So Rye's won, and you said there was a second you also really liked, Keith.
Yep, players playoff, and I'm not talking Rory.
Ooh. Oh, this could be anybody.
No. Who is in the playoff?
Currently number 6 on the U.S. Ryder Cup point standings, JJ Spahn.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah.
JJ this week. But JJ won a Valero, so you just like JJ in the state of Texas. Love that.
I like JJ where, you know, approach play, you know, everyone's going to be talking about bombers, you know, Toasty last year, Jaeger, you got to be aggressive off the tee. You got to do all these things. This is a Tom Doak design, guys. You got to get the ball in the hole and you got to get it close. These are 7,000 square foot greens on average. They're huge. This is a great preview for Augusta National. We have huge greens with a ton of movement to them. You got to be able to score from 100 feet and in. You got to be able to lag putt, got to be able to chip, and you better be good with your long irons because you've got what? 5 par 4s over 490. The average par 3s.
A lot of long irons on par 3s too, like 11, 8. Actually, 11 and 7 are both really long par 3s.
Yeah, both over 215. So right there, you've got, 5 or 6 approach shots, like right around 200 yards. And JJ Spahn, the way he's striking it right now. And, you know, if it's him and Rory again, I love it. JJ's a guy you root for sure.
Do your models change at all with weather because they're expected to get rain? Does that ever make you favor somebody that carries the ball further? Or would it maybe try to make you maybe get away from a player that doesn't hit it quite as far? Because Aaron Rye relies a lot on run with his driver.
Yeah, but Aaron Rye is better than most average PGA Tour players with a 5-iron when they have a 7-iron.
That's a good point.
Like it's his superpower. But Smiley, the best way to answer your question is that it has to be significant weather. It has to be Troon-like weather. Or it has to be like super, super wet and soft where carry distance. They're not going to get that much rain there, right? They've gotten 0.2 inches so far in the month of March. Now, it did snow in January and they did get a lot of wet activity in a cold winter, but that's probably has more to do with the grow-in. So I'd be really good with tight lies around those dope greens, right? Mm. These guys, you know, you better be a good Nipsey Russell, right? You better be nipping those things. So those would be more of my concerns because of the weather that Houston has seen. Last week was a joke. You know, everyone was like, oh, the storm of the century is coming in the afternoon. The odds boards moved and everything. It was
it was a nothing burger. It actually got easier in the afternoon.
So everyone said you have to favor the AM-PM wave. 8 of the final top 10, including Hovland and JT, went PM-AM. I went the other way for leverage because the value on the board went so high for guys like, you know, that were up there, like a Hovland went from 50 to 80, you know, Jake Knapp went from like 60 to 90. Like there were all these guys that made these huge jumps. Lucas Glover was another one. And, you know, I went the other way. Smiley, it takes a lot of weather to get me off of what I think Keith's keys are for the week to answer your question.
Keith bringing the heat as always. Got all the details locked in. I'm going to my closet. I'm going to get my big block letters, Rye Guys hats. Everyone get your Rye Guys merch out this week. I'm going to get my Hawaiian button-down polo for JJ Spahn. We're riding with Aaron Rye and JJ this week at the Houston Open. Read the Line is where you can check out Keith's stuff. It's phenomenal every week to get you prepped for the tournament. And Keith, thanks for hanging with us again. Really, really fun conversation as always.
Guys, I always appreciate being with you. And once again, Smiley, appreciate the ace and the cold beers at TGL.
Of course. We'll have to do another one sometime.
Yeah.
Like I can just do that on command.
Enjoy match two tonight, Keith. We love
absolutely.
Fun. There you have it. Really fun conversations, as promised, with James Colgan and Keith Stewart. Hope you got a little bit smarter on a variety of different golf topics thanks to those two. And so we're on to Houston, Smiley. By the time people are listening to this, you were on site walking around, getting a feel for the course. And everyone who's listening or watching right here, make sure you're subscribed to our Instagram because we got one and done picks coming soon. Excited for it.
Yeah, it's going to be, it'd be interesting to see if we fade Keith or not on our picks, because that would be quite a bit as well. He's like, all right, we hear all of this of like a get back to even pick. And then we just completely go off the rails with a DP World Tour player feeling good about him this week.
Yeah, I'm not so naive as to fade Keith's picks. As we discussed, I think, on the show before, I might be giving out recipes on Instagram Live this week instead, and maybe just ending with the Keith suggestion. We'll see how it comes out in the wash. But no, good to get some insight from Keith there. I need a little bit of mojo to pick up. And excited to see Scotty and Rory in the field this week. It's a little Masters tune-up.
So, and if you give recipes, please give shareable dips or appetizers. That would be what I would be interested in listening to. I don't want a full dinner recipe. If you want to go through game day type of recipes, I'm here for that. But don't come in here with a chicken pot pie recipe.
That's great guidance. We're going to keep it game day focused. We're going to get everyone, you know, a lot of people are about to sit in front of a television for a number of hours consuming Masters coverage wall to wall. So we'll see if we can't, you know, give them a little something to preview for that. And then and then maybe that's the turnaround I'm going to need to get the one and done picks right. So let's hope for that this week.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's all we got for this episode. We appreciate you watching and listening, however you're consuming. And hope you enjoy the Houston Open this week. We'll be back here very shortly to recap that tournament. Talk to you soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.